Guten Tag, ich begrüße Sie.
Good morning and welcome to this year's Financial News Conference for Bayer AG. Lovely to have you with us today. We are very much concerned about what's going on these days in Ukraine. The pandemic is another concern, and that is the reason why this is a virtual news conference again this year. We want to make the most of it and hope that you can agree to this format. Let me give you a couple of bits of information on our speakers today. All members of the board are with you today. They will be giving us an overview of the course of business for fiscal 2021 and the outlook for 2022, as well as their plans for 2022. The CEO will be speaking to us, Werner Baumann, then CFO Wolfgang Nickel. We'll be hearing from Rodrigo Santo, who is now head of crop science since the beginning of this year, Stefan Ulrich, who is head of the pharmaceuticals division, Heiko Schippel, who's head of consumer health, and Serena Lin, who is a member of the board of management and has been responsible for transformation and talent now for a year. As you can see, most of the members of the board are in different rooms, and this is because we abide by social distancing rules, which apply to Bayer throughout. After the initial statements from each member of the board, they will all be available to answer your questions. If you have a question, then of course you can let us know by using the raise your hand function. We will note your name down. And please remember that we don't have a chat function. Instead of that, you have the possibility to ask your questions directly. I will give you more information on that in just a minute. But before we begin, I'd like to give you some information on forward-looking statements as well as other legal information. This should be seen in conjunction with these following statements. This now gives me the opportunity to hand over to Werner Baumann.
Guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren.
Good morning, everybody. On behalf of the entire Board of Management, I would like to wish you all a very warm welcome to our virtual financial news conference. I'm delighted that Serena Lin and Rodrigo Santos are joining us today for the first time. In just a moment, we'll outline what we achieved in 2021 and present the outlook for our company this year. But first of all, we too are certainly shocked by the events of the past few days and are very concerned about the situation of the Ukrainian people. An attack on a sovereign country in the middle of Europe. Until last week, hardly any of us would have thought this possible. It's a heavy blow for the universal values of freedom and democracy. These situations call for the primacy of politics. Now is the time for united and decisive political action. For our part, we are doing everything in our power to support our colleagues and their families in Ukraine. Likewise, we are working to maintain the supply of our products to the population, including vital medicines and agricultural products to ensure food security. That applies to Ukraine, but our concern and commitment to food security goes far beyond that, as Ukraine is one of the world's largest exporters of grain. We have also started to support with humanitarian aid, such as financial donations, vital medical products, and by providing accommodation for refugees. As I already mentioned, during the COVID-19 pandemic, we are seeing a great willingness to help among our employees, which we as a company expressly support. It is clear that the war in Ukraine is currently at the forefront of everybody's minds. Nevertheless, I'd now like to turn to the real reason for this event. As a joint board of management team, we'd like to show you what Bayer achieved in 2021 and what our plans are for 2022. If we look back at 2021, it was much more than just the year of transition that we announced at the beginning. Fiscal 2021 was a really good year for Bayer, both operationally and strategically. We posted substantial growth, strengthened our innovation pipeline, and made progress toward our sustainability targets. All this shows that Bayer is on the right track. Following very strong business performance, we revised our full-year guidance in November for the second time that year. We have now not only met this updated group forecast, but in fact exceeded it. What is particularly encouraging is that all three divisions grew dynamically in 2021, and what's more, they all outpaced their respective markets. Bayer Group sales increased substantially in 2021 to more than 44 billion euros. Clean EBITDA, our primary KPI for earnings, came in at more than 11 billion euros. Despite considerable investments in research and development and in the market launch of new products, we were able to almost completely offset negative currency effects and substantial cost increases. Core earnings per share increased very encouragingly to 6 euros 51 cents. Wolfgang Nickel will go into these figures in more detail shortly. But our accomplishments didn't stop there. We also made significant progress in innovation and launched new products. For example, our new product for kidney disease, Kerendia, our new Intacta 2 Extend soybeans, and our new Bepanthen Derma skincare product. We invested a record 5.4 billion euros in research and development in 2021. And we also further expanded our innovation capabilities with numerous acquisitions, investments, and partnerships. Our Leaps by Bayer unit now holds stakes in more than 50 innovative biotech startups. As a life science company, our objective is to harness the huge opportunities offered by the state-of-the-art technologies emerging in this digital age, what experts are calling the bio-revolution. We are leveraging the potential of gene editing in the fields of healthcare and agriculture. In medicine, we are researching the targeted editing of individual genes responsible for illnesses such as Parkinson's disease. In agriculture, we can give crops the traits they need to better withstand extreme weather conditions. The area of climate adaptation is likely to become increasingly significant over time. We are also making good progress in our transformation into a carbon neutral company. Sustainability is a key element of our strategic alignment. We continue to steadfastly drive forward these measures in 2021 and achieved major progress. We reduced our greenhouse gas emissions by 11.5% and are on track to achieve our goal of becoming carbon neutral by 2030. We have signed agreements for approximately 600,000 megawatt hours of electricity from renewable energy sources and have thus increased its share in our power mix to roughly one quarter. We have set an internal CO2 price of 100 euros per metric ton, which is incorporated into investment decisions and accelerates decarbonisation. So, over the last year, we grew our business while at the same time reducing our emissions. This means that we have decoupled growth and CO2 emissions. So we're on the right track here too. We are also seeing encouraging steps regarding the glyphosate litigation in the United States. The US Supreme Court has showed interest in the Hardeman case by inviting the Solicitor General representing the US government to file a brief in this case. Moreover, we have won two consecutive jury trials in California. We are continuing to execute our five-point plan, and we are prepared for any outcome at the Supreme Court. So let's now take a closer look at fiscal 2021. And for that, I will hand over to Wolfgang.
Ladies and gentlemen, a warm welcome from me as well. I'm pleased to now take a closer look at our figures for fiscal 2021. As Werner Baumann already mentioned, it was a really good year for Bayer. I'd like to start with sales. Please keep in mind that, as usual, the percentage changes here are adjusted for currency and portfolio effects. Sales at the Bayer Group rose to 44.1 billion euros last year, up nearly 9% compared with 2020, with all businesses and regions contributing. Sales thus surpassed our outdated forecast by around 1 billion euros, despite having to contend with, as expected, significant negative currency effects totaling 1.1 billion euros. EBITDA before special items came in at 11.2 billion euros in 2021, slightly below prior year. Despite considerable investments in research and development and in the market launch of new products, we were able to almost completely offset negative currency effects and substantial partially inflation-related cost increases. My colleagues will go into more detail in a moment. Core earnings per share came in at 6.51 euros, up slightly against the prior year. This was primarily driven by the higher earnings contribution from our agriculture business and the favorable development of the financial result after special items. Another key indicator for us is free cash flow, which is the total operating cash flow less capital expenditures in property, plant and equipment, and intangible assets. This figure increased to 1.4 billion euros in 2021, therefore clearly outperforming our expectations. Despite higher payments in connection with litigation, we are still up 5% from the prior year level. This, once again, underscores our operational strength. Overall, we surpassed our group targets for last year. As Werner Baumann already mentioned, we raised our full-year forecast twice during 2021. The latest revised estimates for 2021 were from November, and we beat them. This particularly applies to sales, but also to the clean EBITDA, core earnings per share, free cash flow, and net financial debt. Together with the Supervisory Board, we will propose to the annual stockholders' meeting a dividend of 2 euros. This means we are maintaining our dividend policy of distributing 30 to 40% of core earnings per share. Though we are closer to the lower part of this range, as was the case last year, our reason is that we want to continue to systematically invest in innovation and growth while at the same time reducing debt. We achieved a great deal in 2021, and yet surely cannot be satisfied with the performance of our stock. Despite the positive development since the beginning of the year, the current share price does not even come close to reflecting the company's true value, in our opinion. We're working hard to help the share continue to rebound through good results and by reliably achieving our targets. This brings us to the performance of our divisions. So let's start with our agriculture business. Sales at Crop Science increased by over 11% to 20.2 billion euros. And in Latin America and Asia Pacific, we achieved double-digit percentage growth. Business was also very good in North America and EMEA, i.e., Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. At corn, seed, and traits, we were able to significantly expand our market share in North America and in Latin America. We also benefited from price increases across all regions. At soybean seed and traits, sales grew by double-digit percentages in North America and Latin America due to an increase in volumes and prices. Our sales of herbicides were up by double digits too, supported by substantial price increases. EBITDA before special items at Crop Science rose by 3.6% in 2021 to 4.7 billion euros. Here, we were able to compensate for inflation-related cost increases as well as for negative currency effects of 387 million euros. At our pharmaceuticals division, we saw some of our businesses clearly recovering from the impact of the COVID-19 restrictions in 2021, in particular ophthalmology, radiology, and women's health care. Sales at pharmaceuticals climbed markedly overall, rising by 7.4% to 18.3 billion euros. In ophthalmology, we saw sales of our blockbuster drug Eylea capture market share. Sales of Eylea surged by 19% in total. And sales of our top-selling drugs Xarelto also climbed significantly with growth of 6%. Higher volumes, particularly in China and Russia, were partially offset by price-related declines in sales, due primarily to new tender procedures in China. What's more, we were able to launch several new products very successfully. EBITDA before special items at Pharmaceuticals amounted to 5.8 billion euros in 2021, below the prior year figure. This was due to the launch of new products and significant investments in our pharmaceutical research. At Consumer Health, we saw an excellent business performance once again in 2021. Sales advanced by 6.5% to 5.3 billion euros, with the division maintaining its momentum through broad-based growth across all regions. The greater focus on health and prevention in connection with the pandemic continued to generate substantial growth in the nutritionals category, which saw sales rise 12% in 2021. Sales in the dermatology and pain and cardio categories increased by 5% and 8% respectively, buoyed by the launch of innovative products. In the allergy and cold category, we saw a moderate flu season in the first half of 2021, mainly due to the COVID-19 restrictions. However, the category achieved strong growth in the second half of the year. EBITDA before special items at Consumer Health in 2021 came in at 1.2 billion euros, a substantial increase of 6.8% compared with 2020. Here, we were able to compensate for inflation-related costs as well as negative currency effects through continuous price and cost management. That concludes my review of our financial figures for 2021. And now it's time to hear more from those in charge of our business operations. So I'd like to first hand over to Rodrigo Santos.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity to share the important developments that happened in 2021 in our journey to shape the future of sustainable and digital agriculture to benefit the farmers, the consumers, and the entire planet. When I travel around the world and talk to farmers, I'm always impressed when I hear about the significant challenge they must overcome. Producing affordable, safe, and health food for a growing population, while at the same time dealing with more extreme climate conditions and even fewer resources. I strongly believe that agriculture can be part of the solution for climate change, helping to create a carbon neutral future. To achieve that, we need to continue to innovate and create the technology that will help small, medium, and large farmers globally. And that's why 2021 was an outstanding year for Bayer Crop Science. We were able to make significant progress on our innovation pipeline. We achieved more than 500 seed deployments and more than 300 new crop protection product registrations, as well as continue to advance innovation in biologics, biotechnology, and digital farm solutions. A great example of that was the launch of RNA-based corn rootworm trait technology in Brazil and in the US with VT Pro 4 and SmartStax Pro. This is truly an industry first. Soybean, we also launched the third generation of biotechnology in Brazil with Intacta 2 Extend on 800,000 acres. And we successfully launched Extend Flex in the United States on 16 million acres. Turning to digital farm solutions, 2021 saw a strong expansion of our digital platforms for farmers. For instance, FieldView reached 180 million subscribed acres in 23 countries, and we now have 70 partners on the platform. We also expanded our Orbia digital ag marketplace in Latin America and entered into a new collaboration with Microsoft to upgrade and enhance our digital infrastructure for B2B solutions, opening up many new opportunities to bring farmers value-adding tools that leverage data from their fields. The digital platform also allowed us to make very strong progress on the carbon farming, through which farmers, by employing sustainable practices, can sequester carbon on their soil, helping to combat climate change. More than 2,600 farmers in 10 countries around the world are participating now in the carbon farming program, which is a great achievement. We also established a new collaboration that goes even further. Bayer, Amazon Web Services, and Bushel have together launched the Carbon View project in the United States. It's intended to become the first digital solution to enable farmers to measure their carbon footprint of the entire corn value chain. The first pilot project was recently initiated, and we are excited to see what comes next in the future. Beyond digital, collaborations are also helping us drive innovation for tomorrow. For instance, we are investing in partnerships through our LEAPS venturing platform and with other companies in areas such as biological treatment of seeds that can help to capture nitrogen and reduce the need to use fertilizer. All these innovations have the clear goal to help farmers to be successful. And doing so, Bayer Crop Science will also succeed. And you can see this clearly in the results shared by Wolfgang for 2021, where we achieved 11.1% sales growth and the 4% EBITDA growth, as well in our guidance for 2022. For this year, we are guiding for the 7% currency and portfolio adjusted sales growth and the EBITDA margin before special items of 25 to 26%. That will help us to continue the positive cycle of investments in innovation for sustainable and digital agriculture that will benefit farmers as well as society as a whole. And with that, I would like to hand over to Stefan and our pharmaceutical business. Stefan, over to you.
Vielen Dank, Rodrigo.
Thank you very much, Rodrigo. I'm delighted to be able to give you a brief update on our pharmaceuticals business. Our results have already been talked about. Of course, we're pleased with the strong growth. Our business has continued to recover from the effects of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. The fact that the number of treatments, particularly in the areas of ophthalmology, women's healthcare, and radiology, has again risen sharply is very good news, especially for patients. 2021 was an important year for setting the course of our R&D activities in the future, as well as for our launches of new products with blockbuster potential. Over the past 3 years, we have been systematically and very successfully driving forward a fundamental transformation of our innovation model. During this period, we've concluded more than 24 alliances and acquisitions. We have also successfully created an industry-leading cell and gene therapy platform, and with the acquisition of Vividion, gained access to new modalities in the field of chemical active substances. Let me first turn to the new products that we successfully launched in 2021. Given the very good study results, we now believe that these products have a peak sales potential of more than 5 billion euros. In the fall of 2021, for example, we launched our new drug product, Kerendia, in the United States, and are now once again fully present on the U.S. market with a product in the cardiovascular area. It's the first drug of its kind for adult patients with chronic kidney disease and type 2 diabetes. Worldwide, there are 160 million people living with this disease. Last week, The European Medicines Agency, EMA, likewise granted us marketing authorization on the basis of the new study data. Another example, this time in cardiovascular medicine, is our new product Verquvo for chronic heart failure. We were granted regulatory approval for Verquvo in several key markets last year, including the European Union. With sales of more than 200 million euros, our new cancer drug, Nubeqa, performed exceptionally well in 2021, driven by higher volumes in the United States. In view of the positive results of the Phase 3 ARASENS trial, we have now raised the peak sale potential of Nubeqa to more than 3 billion euros. We have also achieved great progress in our work to further develop our pipeline, for example, with the development candidate elinzanetant for the treatment of symptoms during menopause. In addition, we are currently conducting research into an active substance that may inhibit coagulation factor 11 and could be launched on the market as a successor to our current bestseller product Xarelto in the coming years. A phase 3 trial with this compound is set to start before the end of this year. We also received good news in relation to Xarelto last year. In October, the European Patent Office reversed a first-instance decision and maintained our patent for the most widely used once-daily administration of Xarelto until January 2026. At country level, the option to challenge the patent remains, but overall, on the European level, we have secured exclusivity for Xarelto for almost 2 years longer than previously anticipated. We've achieved a lot over the past 2 years, and we have also announced some exciting news for this year. Complementing our current activities, we have established a new research focus in cell and gene therapy, which is now an industry leader in the global pharmaceutical business. This involves, on the one hand, the targeted modification of individual genes responsible for diseases, and, on the other hand, the use of pluripotent stem cells, which raises regenerative medicine to an unprecedented level. So we are conducting research into completely novel therapies for several diseases. In the area of Parkinson's disease, we currently have two different phase 1 trials ongoing with patients in the United States and Canada. We expect initial results from one of these two studies by the end of this year. Over the past few years, we have successively built up our platform of cell and gene therapy through pioneering acquisitions. Through our latest strategic partnership with Mammoth Biosciences, we secured access to novel gene editing technologies. Mammoth was co-founded by Jennifer Doudna, who was honored with the Nobel Prize in Chemistry. This is another partnership that gives us access not only to the latest technologies, but also to the top scientists and visionaries in the biotech scene. At the same time, it also enhances our own appeal as a partner in what is without doubt a very exciting research environment. Equally crucial for the future of our pharmaceutical business is the acquisition of Vividion. Vividion's technology will open up a completely new perspective for us in chemical pharmaceuticals research. It can be used to address completely new target proteins that were previously beyond our reach. This is particularly relevant for later applications in the fields of oncology and immunology. The figures for 2021 published today show that we are investing substantially in our pharmaceutical business and thus in the future. At the same time, we are able to achieve a very attractive margin despite increased spending on research, development, and the launch of new compounds. For 2022, we forecast sales growth of 3-4% and a margin of around 32%. We are very deliberately investing in new technologies and solutions that can help patients not just today, but also in the future. We are thus systematically continuing along the path we have chosen and resolutely driving forward the transformation of our pharmaceuticals business. With that, I hand over to Heiko Schipper.
Stefan. It is now my pleasure to share how consumer health performed in 2021 and what we can expect for 2022. We are very pleased with our business performance last year. We saw significant and broad-based sales growth across nearly all our categories and all regions, placing us amongst the leaders in our industry. On top of that, our margin improved for the third year in a row. This strong performance is due in part to the new products we launched, including innovation behind some of our biggest brands. Take Bepanthen, for example. With Bepanthen Derma, we launched a new skincare product for severe dry skin in Latin America, Europe, and in Asia. In the United States, we took our Aleve brand into the fast-growing topical pain relief segment with the launch of Aleve X. In 2022, we have more big innovation plans. The biggest is the launch of the Astepro brand for allergy in the United States. Astepro will be the first steroid-free antihistamine spray for allergy symptoms that's available over the counter in the United States. Previously only available with a prescription, this important switch adds to our industry-leading allergy portfolio to offer a real breakthrough for the 50 million Americans who suffer from allergies. Looking at our industry more broadly, more and more people are recognizing the importance of personal health. Studies show that roughly 70% of consumers are more focused on their everyday health and wellness as a result of the pandemic. That trend is reflected in the development of our nutritionals business, which includes leading brands like One A Day and Redoxon. The category grew a remarkable 12% in 2021, on top of a very strong 23% already in 2020. Another trend is the emergence of digital technologies. Today, people have more access to digital health information than at any other point in human history. If we look at Germany alone, at least two-thirds of people look at their cell phones as the first source of information about their own health. That's one of the reasons we entered into a partnership with Ada Health last year. Ada is a Berlin-based company that has developed a medical assessment platform with the help of artificial intelligence and Dr. Insight. More than 11 million people around the world have used the platform since 2016, making Ada Health the world's most popular symptom analysis app. Their platform, which is available on several of our brand websites, helps users find appropriate individualized medical information and care that is backed by scientific and medical expertise. We also see digitization playing a crucial role in other areas of our industry. E-commerce is a great example. Whether through large global platforms or smaller online pharmacies, more people are accessing our products through digital channels than ever before. We have significantly strengthened our e-commerce presence over the past years, and in 2021, the channel already contributed to 10% of our sales. Another focus is our work expanding global access to our products where it is needed the most. We aim to enable access to basic healthcare products for people in underserved communities worldwide. As part of this ambition, we have launched the Nutrient Gap Initiative. In just 1 year, the Nutrient Gap Initiative has already reached 20 million people around the world with everyday health products, education, and also empowerment. An essential component is our partnership with the NGO Vitamin Angels. Our work with them aims to reach pregnant women and their babies with education and access to multiple micronutrient supplementation, which the World Health Organization recently added to their list of essential medicines. We genuinely hope this will soon become the global standard of care. On top of expanding access, we are also investing 100 million euros in more sustainable production of our products. By 2030, all our products' packaging will be recyclable or reusable,
because we believe that good business, human health, and a healthy planet go hand in hand. So how do these plans translate into our business outlook for 2022? We expect continued growth across our industry this year. We plan to once again outpace the industry with sales growth between 4 to 5%. We will increase investments in innovation, in particular behind the launch of Aster Pro in the US. Therefore, we expect an EBITDA margin before special items between 22 and 23%, reflecting the increased investment levels behind innovation this year. And with that, I'm happy to hand it over to you, Serena.
Thank you very much, Heiko, and good morning, everybody. Let me start by echoing Werner's concern about the situation in Ukraine. And you can count on us to do everything we can to support our colleagues there. Now, turning to all our achievements in 2021 that our colleagues talked about, from our business performance to great progress in innovation and sustainability, these were only possible because of our people. Bayer today has around 100,000 employees worldwide, passionate and dedicated to our customers, our vision, and our goals. They have maintained their commitment, drive, and high engagement in spite of having to cope with a global pandemic for over 2 years. Now, we have a great deal of pride and respect of what our teams have achieved, and we're very grateful for their efforts. At the same time, ensuring our employees' health and safety have always been our top priority. We supported working from home wherever possible, and where physical presence is required, such as our manufacturing and R&D facilities, we provided additional protective equipment, strict hygiene and safety rules, and backup plans for the critical infrastructure. We helped with testing and actively offered vaccination wherever we could. Now, very fortunately, our measures have had impact. In every single country where data is available, the vaccination rate amongst Bayer employees is higher than the national rates, and sometimes substantially higher. Now, our voluntary vaccination campaign was a very important element of our pandemic response, but it's only one of the measures that we have taken since the start of the pandemic. In Germany alone, where we have approximately 23,000 employees, we set up vaccination centers at all major company sites. Over 27,000 vaccinations were administered, and an average vaccination rate is over 90% across our sites. We have distributed hundreds of thousands of masks and over 500,000 self-test kits directly to employees' homes and to our sites. We are truly proud of how our colleagues went above and beyond to help fight the pandemic. For example, at the very peak of the pandemic in India in May this last year, our colleagues at our Vapi production site quickly repurposed the nitrogen plant to supply the local hospital with the much needed oxygen. And this is just one of the countless examples that highlighted our employees living our vision of health for all, hunger for none. Now, tragically, we have also lost colleagues as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, we are obviously deeply saddened by these losses, and have made sure that we provide appropriate support to their loved ones. It truly has been remarkable what we have been able to continue to operate, but also to thrive in this challenging environment. All the more so because the world around us is changing at an unprecedented pace. Werner has already mentioned it. The bio revolution is shifting the paradigms of our industry and opening up huge opportunities for us. But to fully leverage these opportunities, we need to continuously evolve, not only in the relentless business innovations, but also in driving a cultural transformation that will redesign how we work together, streamline processes, accelerate decision-making, and make our teams more diverse and inclusive. Now, we're setting high expectations for our leaders to engage and develop their teams, to shape business growth and environment, and to continue to drive the performance and delivery. I'm also happy to report that we're making great strides in meeting our global inclusion and diversity goals, including reaching gender parity across all managerial levels by 2030. We have not only appointed capable female leaders in key positions, but we have also continued to strengthen the skills and awareness building through unconscious bias trainings and to increase transparency through gender pay equity reporting. Now, the pandemic has clearly shaped the relationship between employers and employees, as well as employees' attitudes toward work and family. As we prepare to bring our employees back to the office, there's no better time for us to re-examine what would the future of work look like that is becoming more digital and more flexible. At the same time, for a science-based company like Bayer, we have the perfect opportunity to continue to amplify our purpose and values and to strengthen an agile, performance-oriented work culture. And with that, I'll hand it back to you, Werner.
Meine Damen und Herren, wie Sie sehen,
ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, there is a lot going on at Bayer, and things are moving in a very positive direction. Team Bayer is working on a large number of topics every day with great urgency and enthusiasm. And we are optimistic when we look ahead to 2022 and beyond. Of course, the current situation in the world around us is beset with numerous question marks. These days, this applies in particular to the invasion of Ukraine. But the further development of the pandemic, inflationary pressures in many countries, and the tense situation in supply chains are also causing uncertainties with which the business world has to contend. We've taken a close look at the industries we're active in, and you've heard the views of my colleagues. We expect market growth in all our businesses and the positive development we saw last year to continue in 2022. For Bayer as a whole, this translates into the following outlook, which we are presenting on a currency-adjusted basis to enhance the comparability of operational performance. In fiscal 2022, we expect to achieve sales of approximately 46 billion euros. This would correspond to a currency and portfolio-adjusted increase of 5%. We anticipate a clean EBITDA margin of about 26%. Based on the sales target, this would correspond to clean EBITDA of around 12 billion euros. For core earnings per share, we are planning an increase to about 7 euros. We will also likely see the US Supreme Court reaching a decision in the Hardeman case this year, at least in terms of accepting or not accepting the case. I would like to take this opportunity to reiterate that we are well prepared for any decision. As ever, our aspiration in 2022 is to deliver on our commitments, to improve human life and develop innovations. The need is greater than ever before. By the end of this year, our planet's population is likely to have exceeded the 8 billion mark. The acceleration of climate change and geopolitical tensions are making the basic provision of healthcare and food increasingly difficult. We know that, as a result of our leading businesses in system-relevant areas, we hold a great responsibility, and we will do everything in our power to uphold it. At times like these, it is once again apparent that we cannot measure Bayer's success solely in terms of good business results. We have helped to overcome a health emergency during the pandemic. We now have to assume that the situation in Ukraine, the world's fourth largest supplier of wheat and corn, will further exacerbate an already strained global food security. As a leading agricultural company, we at Bayer will do everything in our power to ensure security of supply. You can rely on Bayer now as well. We are following our vision, health for all, hunger for none. Thank you very much for your attention, and now we are looking forward to your questions.
Thank you very much. And that brings us to the Q&A session. If you have a question, please use the raise your hand function. I will call your name once it's your turn. When you've been given the floor, a pop-up window will open up. So please then unmute yourself and then wait 2 seconds before you tell us your name and then ask your question. In this way, we can build up your communication to make sure that everyone can hear your question. Your camera will always remain switched off. So let's see how this works. The first question is from Jonas Janssen from the FAZ.
So, ich glaube, das klappt.
I think it seems to be working. Can you hear me? Good. Looks good. Thank you very much. I have two questions. At the beginning, I'd like to ask something about Ukraine. You mentioned that in your annual report. You said that in 2021, which you have just completed, in other words, a production site was set up for corn seed. And in 2021 in Russia, you began to set up a production site there as well. Maybe you could give us a bit more information on that. To what extent will you be involved with crop science and pharmaceuticals in those two countries? And what will that have in terms of an impact on the company? And my second question relates to glyphosate. You referred to the 138,000 claims and 137,000 have been settled. And if I read things correctly, it seems that the provisions for future glyphosate cases would be $7.5 billion. Could you give us some more information on that? How much has been paid out so far in settlement? So how much have you spent, including the provisions that you still have? Yes, Mr. Janssen, thank you very much for your question. I will answer the first question on Ukraine, and Wolfgang Nickel will answer your second question. Ukraine, our business is essentially agriculture, crop science, consumer health, and pharmaceuticals is smaller in Ukraine. And our seed production has been completed, and as far as the seeds that the farmers need, they've already been supplied to the farmers. In Ukraine, these are businesses that are taken up in the first couple of months of each year. In Russia, it's a bit different. In Russia, most of our business is in pharmaceuticals and consumer health, and the crop science portion is somewhat smaller. But one thing is quite clear. Our business in Russia and the size of the country and the population is much larger. So Russia as a whole accounts for about 2% of our group sales with all divisions. Ukraine is much lower, much well below 1% of our business, our global business figures, that is. So I think this gives you sort of an idea. In Ukraine, we've made a lot of investments, and we are also committed to making sure that the civilians in both countries are supplied with our products. They need medicine. They need to have access to food. So even beyond Ukraine, they're a major exporter, and that means that our focus now is to do everything we can to work with partners and other companies in the food chain to ensure food supply also in Russia's export countries, for example, Africa and the Middle East. Wolfgang? Mr. Janssen, let me talk about the provisions for glyphosate. Let's take one look back. In 2020, we had about $11.7 billion in provisions, and last year we had another $4.5 billion. Added to the provision. So a total of about $16 billion in total. So we think, and we continue to think, that both the current and future cases can be dealt with. In other words, our five-point plan can be worked through. And as Mr. Baumann said this morning, we are prepared for any outcome that the Supreme Court might come to. And overall, we've considered all, we have $9 billion for all cases in provisions. And as you say, a large share of this was for glyphosate. And as I said, we are now in the process of going through these cases. $3.9 billion in 2020 is what we paid out. And as I said before, it was $4.3 billion last year. And this year, we expect it will be about $2.5 billion for all cases taken together. And that is in our cash plan. But the quintessence from all of this is that we think that we have sufficient amount of provisions. And some of the current cases, the 30,000 cases, and any future cases, we believe that we can deal with all of these with those provisions. Thank you.
The next question is from Patricia Weiss from Reuters. Ms. Weiss.
Ja, schönen guten Morgen.
Yes, good morning. I hope you can all hear me. I have three questions. Firstly, when do you expect there will be a decision from the Supreme Court as to whether they will take the case on? It's also been heard that we may have some information about the sale of pesticides. And lastly, you said that the share prices don't reflect the value of the company. Now, I would be interested here, would you consider sales or any other further division? Thank you, Ms. Weiss. I will try and respond to your three questions. First of all, your first question regarding the decision from the Supreme Court about the appeal, the ongoing appeal case. Now, the Supreme Court will first be calling on, or has called upon the Solicitor General of the US to request an opinion from the US administration. And now there have been a number of discussions between the parties in February, and this recommendation is now being prepared, but there is no fixed date of any deadline as to when this recommendation has to be announced. I think we have to anticipate that this can take a number of months, and once that recommendation has been announced, then the Supreme Court will incorporate it into their own considerations and then decide whether our appeal case will be taken on with our position or whether it won't. And so those are the next steps. The decision regarding whether the case will even be taken on will probably be made in the second half of this year with a subsequent ruling in this case. The second question, the sale of environmental science. Now, we said last year that we would be saying goodbye to this. This process is underway, and we will not be providing any further information about any ongoing sales. And we have said that we want to conclude all of this process by the end of the year. Also, regarding the selection of a prospective buyer and the transaction in and of itself. Regarding the share prices, Wolfgang Nickel has already spoken about this. We are, despite the good performance of our company and our significant progress in innovation and the good news regarding patent protection, particularly with regard to Xarelto, we still can't be happy with our share price. We are doing everything we can to change this. I think also with an attractive outlook that we have for this year, after the very good figures that we have seen for 2021, and the company's focus on the healthcare sector and nutritionals, these are always central because we're talking about people's basic daily needs, and we think that we're in a very good position there long term. Okay, thank you very much. The next question from Annette Becker from the Börsenzeitung. Ms. Becker.
So auch ich hoffe, Sie können.
Yes, I hope you can hear me as well. Excellent. Good morning. I have a question regarding Ukraine, Russia. Perhaps you could briefly outline it. When you said 2% Russia of your group sales, what is the situation with earnings here? And also, you said that you will focus on providing a civil population with basic goods. And then I have a question regarding litigation from shareholders of the fourth quarter last year. Have you reached a settlement there? And if not, why not? And then I would like to know how you wish to regain your capital costs. Yes, good morning from us as well, Ms. Becker. I will respond to the first three questions and then pass over to Wolfgang Nickel regarding the capital equity costs. Now, firstly, turning to Ukraine-Russia. What we have seen here, I don't think anybody, certainly we, didn't anticipate this happening 2 weeks ago. A war in the middle of Europe with Russia invading Ukraine and being just at the gates of Kiev and bombarding Kiev. And a war can only ever have losers, and it is predominantly civil society that suffers. For us, it's very, very key that in this situation as well, we do everything we possibly can to help people in Ukraine, but also in Russia, to provide them with access to the products that they need. Just to reiterate, we're talking about an awful lot of people who are reliant on medication from us, but also from our competitors. I think what I'm saying now is true of all other companies, particularly in the pharmaceutical industry and in the agricultural sector. Our primary focus is ultimately providing people with medicine and food and securing this in both countries. But we are subject to the primacy of politics, as I've already said. We will, of course, adhere to the measures that are determined and stipulated by politics. For example, payment and transaction and access to these. So we will, of course, adhere to these. But this is also the purpose and the aim of our politicians. We see that civil society is suffering, and we need to make sure that they do not suffer any more than they are already suffering. I think I have said everything I have to say regarding Ukraine and Russia, also regarding the sanctions, and I would now like to pass over to Wolfgang Nickel regarding the capital costs. I think there was also a question about the shareholder litigation, but I can respond to that as well. Good morning, Ms. Becker. Now, you know the rules about accruals. It has to be probable and it has to be calculable. And neither of these criteria fulfilled. It's more likely than not. We didn't have any accruals set aside for this. Regarding the capital costs, we currently assume that over the course of this year, with the increased earnings of 7 euros per share and lower special items, we were talking about 4.8 billion last year, and we have over 1 billion extra in our outlook, so it should be possible to settle out with the capital costs here this year. The next question is from Bert Fronthoff from the Handelsblatt. Mr. Fronthoff.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you can hear me okay. I have to ask another question about Russia. Perhaps you could give us the mood of your employees in Russia. What do they have to say with regard to the situation there? And what have you thought about having some of the German employees come back to Germany from Russia? And do you also expect a type of chain reaction in agriculture? For example, exporter, you talked about Ukraine, and Russia supplies products for fertilizer in Brazil, Latin America, where Bayer is very much exposed there. And also, are you worried that the agriculture may suffer as a result as well? Good morning, Mr. Frontov. Thank you for your questions. As far as the mood goes, yesterday we talked with our senior management by phone. It was a Teams meeting, actually. And of course, just like today, the situation there in Russia and in Ukraine is what everyone is focusing on. Of course, we saw that our people in Ukraine have to be brought to safety. We are seeing to it that private initiatives are also being used to come up with emergency accommodation, and I'm sure you've seen this on the news as well. A lot of people are having a lot of problems in getting money. Here too, we saw to it that our company provided cash for every employee so that they can overcome this first emergency. And what we've seen in Ukraine, the suffering there, and also with our Ukrainian employees who work outside of Ukraine, working for Bayer, that they are very, very much committed to their fellow citizens. We're doing a whole lot more in all sorts of areas. Our first amount of donations, cash and medicine has been sent, and we also have a program which is, we have a donation program which is matched by us. So we are the first ones, and we have, our money has been received, and people are doing this as well, and people are very, very much committed in private areas as well. As far as this chain reaction is concerned, well, think of it like this. You've also seen that the males are not allowed to leave the country. In other words, not to perform their normal jobs, but they are going to serve in the military. And this relates to all sectors of the economy and our business as well. And we have some of our employees who have already gone to the military. And there is an acute lack of truck drivers in Ukraine and Russia. We provide them with their products by road. And there are major problems even before the situation. There was a very negative situation in terms of transportation. And we've also seen that the prices for raw materials in agriculture are at a very high level due to the crisis, but they've gone up again because people are concerned not only because of the drought in Latin America, but that there could be disruptions in supplies, and this could lead to further shortages. So this is something that always affects the armest, the poorest people first in Africa and in the Near East, that they're afraid there won't be sufficient supply. There are a lot of effects that we are keeping our eyes on. We've been analyzing all of this, the payment transactions, which we've discussed as well. Of course, there is a crisis team and other crisis teams working to join up with the main crisis team in order to manage this as best we possibly can. The next question is from Antje Hoening from the Rheinische Post. Go ahead, Ms. Hoening. Good morning. I have three questions on Russia. First of all, what would happen if all of the Russian banks were excluded in the SWIFT system? What would happen then? How would you make emergency payments then? And what about, would you consider Bayer leaving Russia? Also production, et cetera. Do you have any plans in that respect? And as far as the national economy is concerned, do we expect a major recession such as what we had after the financial crisis in 2008? Good morning, Ms. Hoening. Thank you for your questions. As we've already said when we talked about energy payments and energy supplies, there will not be a complete closure of payment transactions. Certain things will be prevented. And this is also in the interest of the West. In Germany, for energy supply, we will have access to energy. And I certainly hope that this will apply to other areas as well, where vital products are needed, both in Ukraine and also in Russia. We hope that they should be able to be supplied. To make one thing very clear, for us, it's not so much a question of economic interest. As I said before, business in Russia and in Ukraine is relatively small compared to our overall sales figures. but that millions of people in both countries, if they have no access to these very vital products, and that is what I said in my speech, Bayer is doing everything it can and will continue to do so, so that we have 100,000 colleagues and we want to be sure to do what we can. Now, your second question, in a crisis, you always ask, what are we doing? And for us, even in other crises that we've been through in recent decades worldwide, we've always said, we are a good corporate citizen. And we're active in these countries so that the population can be served locally with our products as well as our employees. And as long as there are no major restrictions and further sanctions, we will, which would then make it impossible to do business, but we will continue to do business as long as we can. And when it comes to nutrition and healthcare, we see that it's the civilians that are affected most. As far as economic impact is concerned, well, I think it's much too early to say. When we talked about our outlook for 2022, and we said, let's first of all, we're saying that we're optimistic for the year, but of course we do see certain effects of the crisis from Ukraine, as well as anything else that might result for the world economy. These have not been taken into account. We will see to it and try to manage them as best we can. And everything else is what we will see in the quarters to come. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Ludwig Burger from Reuters. Mr. Burger. Thank you. I would just like to ask regarding payment and transactions in Russia. I understood that that is still working with the SWIFT transfer, and also regarding any force majeure regarding a supplier who is important for your glyphosate production, and you said that that would probably restrict your glyphosate supply, and I don't think you said anything about how you would be able to supply your customers. So perhaps you can say something about that and how you can overcome these problems. Well, regarding payment transfers at the moment, I think I would like to pass over to Wolfgang. And then regarding force majeure and glyphosate production, I would like to pass this question to Rodrigo Santos. Yes, Mr. Burger, this money transfers, very, very volatile situation. It's Russian banks that are not allowed to use the SWIFT system, but international banks are. And of course, we have a crisis team for Treasury, and we're looking at questions such as effects, whether we can still hedge, how the various markets are affected. And we're doing this, looking at this on a daily basis. But at the moment, all money transfer systems are working. Now to Rodrigo.
Just very briefly here on that one. So we had one of our suppliers that had a mechanical failure in one of their sites that had that impact. That had an impact in this quarter right now, but it's a marginal impact for the full year. So our supply organization was able to create some alternative plans, and I can affirm that we're going to be able to supply our customers for this season with a marginal impact based on that specific failure of one of our suppliers.
And the next question from Olaf Storbeck from the Financial Times. Mr. Storbeck.
Yeah, hello, könnt ihr mich hören?
Hopefully everybody can hear me, yes. I also have a question regarding the Treasury aspect. It would appear that there are no problems at the moment with payments and money transfers, but do you know already which banks are affected and to what extent you will be affected? Because the big question to me is that we could or you could be moving towards a situation where company operations are cut off from your company cash pool. So how would your employees be affected by this, and how would you try and overcome that? Yes, of course. Thank you, Mr. Storbeck. We are asking this question to ourselves as well. We are working together with our 23 relationship banks, and it would appear that we have a solution for this, and intercompany financing is an important aspect in this regard. But I don't think anybody can make an exact prediction at the moment. I don't think any German or any other international company could do that. But at the moment, everything seems fine. Thank you. The next question is from Elisabeth Durstadt from Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Vielleicht könnten Sie sich
Perhaps you could... Yes, now we can hear you. I have a question about Ukraine. Perhaps you can tell us exactly how many employees you have in Ukraine and how many employees you have in Russia and how many production locations, production sites you have. And do you expect in Ukraine, where we have winter grain already on the fields, but summer grain, do you think you will be able to provide enough crop protection productions? Do you, products? Do you expect a failed harvest in Ukraine because the crops won't be able to be treated? And then I have a question about energy prices. Which oil price and which gas prices are you using for the basis of your outlook? What? How strongly did the increases in energy prices affect your figures last year, and what is your opinion for the coming year? Good morning, Ms. Dostert. Thank you for your questions. Let me begin with the question about the employees in Russia and Ukraine. We have around 1,800 employees in Russia and around 700 employees in Ukraine. We don't have any of our any own production sites in Russia, but as I've already said, particularly in Ukraine, we've invested in the agricultural sector, and we do have a number of production sites in Ukraine for seed production as well. Of course, we don't only supply seed, but also crop protection in to Ukraine, and we have first of all ensured that the stocks, which some of which are in our warehouses and some in our Ukrainian organizations, are accessible. We have ensured this. We have thus far been able to supply our customers, who, of course, themselves, until a week ago, were going about their business as usual, including in the agricultural sector. Therefore, after a week of this conflict, I don't think we can have any perspective as to whether we'll have a failed harvest or not. That will very much depend on how things unfurl over the next few months and as to whether farmers will be able to work their fields again and harvest the crops and then subsequently sell what they've harvested nationally and internationally. And I've already referred to our partners in the food chain that we're working together with retailers in these sectors, and we're trying to support them as best we can regarding the prices, energy, infrastructure. Of course, the price increases have affected us. We've seen what's happened in a private setting as well on these markets, and we have initially taken the prices and costs from last year for our outlook because they were the parameters that we had, and these crisis-related peaks that I've that we've already seen have not been incorporated into our outlook. However, I would very much say that we are not as energy-intensive as we used to be, because we are focusing more on healthcare and agriculture. Therefore, if you look at all the energy-related expenses on an annual basis, we're talking about half a billion euros last year, and this will of course increase, that's what we assume, perhaps significantly. But as I've already said, we will have to see how we can account for these cost increases and hold our pledges for 2022 and mitigate these price increases.
So we have time for three more questions. Mr. Davis, go ahead. Good morning. Thank you. I have a question on the 1,800 employees that you have in Russia. If you don't have any production sites there, what do they do?
Tätig. Und die zweite Frage.
And my second question is, in other areas, you said that the cold and flu products, that demand for that has increased. Can you tell us to what extent this has gone up? And to what extent did it decline in the first part of the year? Thank you. Good morning, Mr. von Drewitz. Thank you for your questions. As I said, in Russia, we have primarily the healthcare sector, in other words, pharmaceuticals and consumer health. That is the largest share of our business there. That's why in this area, most of our employees work in those divisions. Of course, there are field reps for consumer health and pharmaceuticals, and this would also include our infrastructure here for our Russian company there. And of course, they have some people supporting this business. Now, as far as the flu season 2020 and 2021 and the shifts for different reasons, Heiko Rippe will answer that question for you. Heiko, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Werner. Indeed, if we look at the developments in 2021, we really have to go back to 2020 first to understand the trends. In 2020, we saw in the first half when the pandemic was just starting, actually people buying a lot of products related to cough and cold. As the pandemic was somehow also related to respiratory disease. So we saw a big jump in the first half of 2020. And as we then went through 2021, we then saw in the first half of 2021 a double-digit decline in sales, because there was indeed hardly any cold as people were wearing masks. And people were also by that time clear that the only solution was to vaccinate and not to use cough and cold products. So 2021 saw a very negative first half, a double digit. In the second half, as the many countries started to open up more, we saw a kind of recovery. But I think we have to be clear that still the cough and cold is still below where it was before. So in the second half, there was a double-digit increase in sales. Overall, however, the category was still negative in 2021. In 2022, we can expect the first half to be positive, because last year, in 2021, the first half, it was very low. And of course, economies and countries are opening up more. So there will be a higher level that I expect then in 2022 in the second half to flatten out. So just to make the story simple, 2022 is likely going to be a higher growth in that category as masking is being reduced around the world. And also then flu is going to unfortunately increase. And as a consequence, people will buy more products. Yeah, so we expect for 2022 probably in the high single digits, maybe even double digit growth on cough and cold, mainly in the first half of the year.
And the next question is Tim Lowe from Bloomberg. Mr. Lowe, go ahead.
Hello, Guten Morgen. Ich versuche...
Good morning. I'm trying to understand what the impact of the war will be when it comes to global food supply. As I said, how can it be? Ukraine is the fourth largest supplier of wheat and corn, and why does Bayer only earn less than 1% of its earnings in Ukraine? I don't understand how that fits together. And I also want to know, if there is a poor crop in Ukraine, how could Bayer help out elsewhere worldwide? So is there a backup plan, so to speak? Those were my two questions. Thank you. Thank you. Ukraine is an agricultural country. They have very fertile soil and large areas, and agriculture is clearly the most important source of foreign exchange, and it is the main driver for exports. In Ukraine, we've been active there for many decades, and we also have a very good market share there. And in Ukraine, you will see the sales of seed and pesticides. It's somewhat different than the business we have in the U.S., Canada, or Latin America. And then, of course, Rodriguez Santos can maybe give us some more information on that in just a minute, and he can tell us how all of these businesses fit together and how our sales is relatively small in Ukraine for Bayer, but it is also where crop science has the major role to play. Now, as far as crises and disruptions in agriculture, when it comes to the supply chain, poor crops, etc., this is a bit too early right now to say. We don't know what the impact will be, and we're working hard to make sure that it doesn't happen. And even before the attack of the Russians in Ukraine, we were talking to the Ukrainians to come up with some emergency plans that can be activated. And that's exactly what we're doing right now. Rodrigo, maybe you can say a couple of things about the business in Ukraine and the overall business for crop science.
Thank you, Werner. As you said, right, so Ukraine is very concentrated on corn. Many other countries are more diversified in terms of crops and also a lot of consumption internally. So Ukraine is an important exporter for corn, especially. We are very concerned, as Werner said, not only about Ukraine, but what is this impact globally, right? We are watching that very closely. Some of you also mentioned about the fertilizers coming from Russia to other countries, to Latin America as another example. So that's our concern. Our concern is about the food supply. And this is what we're going to do again as Bayer, as we did before, work very close with our customers to supply them what is needed so they can produce the food for the society. So it's an important element. We're going to be watching closely. As Werner mentioned many times, it's very hard to predict what will happen right now because we didn't start even the season in Ukraine, the planting season. But we're going to need to watch this very closely and work very close with the farmers to supply what they need to produce the food.
We will draw this financial news conference to a close. Thank you very much for your interest and your attention. Thank you. And please stay healthy. And we wish all of you a good day in these very moving times. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.